Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for this Friday, September 9th. Pat Kreitlow here, Luke Mathers over there, the gleaming state capitol just down the road from us here. But we're going to start with the story up north in just a minute, as soon as I get my notes in order here. And poor Luke has had to watch. When I come to town, I'm working off of a laptop rather than the really nice desktop that I have back at our Lake Wissota studio. And I have to be reminded that, you know, a laptop, even a MacBook, does not have the firepower of the iMac that is sitting on my desk. And you're just hearing the little fan whirring inside this poor little laptop, just going, please, please, not 42 tabs. You can't have 42 tabs open. And so when I'm tap dancing with Luke here over what I want to say next, it's because I feel like I got to close a few of these.
You got to give the laptop a little relief. Come on.
I know. Well, you know, old habits die hard, but it's doing its best. So I'm working off this laptop. The desktop in front of me here in the radio studio is controlled by Luke, who, by the way, for all the teasing I give him, is not nearly, he could be a real jerk about this. He could go total passive aggressive and just fill my screen with, like, maybe he's playing Wordle, you know, while he's supposed to be doing some work or something like that. But he keeps this train running, and I do appreciate that. And again, I'm sorry to disappoint you that for my second trip down here, again, I bring you no zucchini. You know I'm going to be looking for it at the farmer's market tomorrow. You know I'm going to be looking for it.
It's, when it comes, it's going to come in droves. I know it. There's going to be like cartons and cartons of zucchini once you finally find some.
I'm thinking, yeah, before I leave town to head back up to Chippewa, there may be a bag here for you. Maybe.
Just like come in on Monday and there's just a mailbox full of zucchini.
It's possible. And then I will take some home, and then I'm going to do what any red-blooded American would do, the kind who isn't big on vegetables. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to fry the you-know-what out of it. I'm going to put it, what'd you say, some olive oil and some sea salt or something.
I like the Penzi's is by far, they have a Justice one, which is it's a Justice spice is what it's referred to. And
oh yeah, she did not make the cut with the Spice Girls, but yes, Justice spice.
Justice spice, yeah. Yes. But it's good for vegetables and poultry. And so you just take some of that and you olive oil with the zucchini and you put some Justice on there from Penzi's and it's delicious.
All right. Well, if assuming I go, because it sounds like there's going to be a million people there. And B, if I find some zucchini, we'll see how that works. Up north, a very controversial pipeline is going to be allowed to continue operating. We are talking about Enbridge and their Line 5 pipeline. A federal judge said that the company can continue to operate it through the tribal lands of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa while the company is working to reroute the line through nearby properties. The nearly 70-year-old pipeline goes right through Bad River territory and through the very vulnerable Bad River watershed. Because of approvals that were given in some way, shape, or form some 70 years ago, when we know a lot more about, you know, pipelines and failures and taking care of the environment than they knew back then. But Federal Judge William Connolly ruled that the pipeline could continue operating while they work on the reroute around the Bad River land because of damage that could be caused to consumers, markets, and international relations if you were to disrupt the operations. So damage to consumers and the market and Canada's feelings matter more than potential damage to clean water up north that would flow right into Lake Superior. The ruling comes 3 years after the band filed a lawsuit to remove the pipeline because right-of-way easements between the tribe and the company expired in 2013. The pipeline operates on about 12 miles of reservation lands. Tribal officials no longer wanted Enbridge to operate the pipeline, writes Laura Schult in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They feared a rupture could pose grave environmental damage, especially along a meandering channel of the Bad River that has gotten steadily closer to the buried pipeline. And, of course, that leads to worries about a rupture. And if you haven't looked, and chances are you haven't, look up the pictures of when the Enbridge pipeline spilled in 2010 on the Kalamazoo River in Michigan. It took years and more than $1 billion to clean that up. So in response to the lawsuit, Enbridge had proposed, instead of the 12 miles going through the Bad River lands, Enbridge proposed a 41-mile reroute of the pipeline. But while it wouldn't be on Bad River territory anymore, it's still a pipeline running through some sensitive environmental areas of northern Wisconsin. So needless to say, a lot of people not happy with the reroute and saying that there have to be other ways to move fossil fuels, and it's basically moving from one part of Canada through the other, but doing so coming down through northern Wisconsin and Michigan. So the pipeline will continue to operate for now. And I guess as we've had to do for decades, we'll just keep our fingers crossed. We'll have more coming up in just a moment on a nice Friday morning ahead of a rainy weekend. You're up north. Mark Jacob joins us now, as he does on Friday mornings, to talk about some of the national news headlines, some Wisconsin news, and especially how the media covers these things, because Mark, like myself, I'm allowed to now have opinions after all those years of, having to pretend. And that is not to say that there isn't good journalism, but I think we've moved past the fairy tale that, all reporters have no biases and they never come through. So, you've got to sometimes hold a lens up to these things. And Mark does a fantastic job of that. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just wanted to point on that, Pat, is that people who say that, who have been covering a beat for 20 years and say they have no opinions about it, those are the ones we should distrust. Mm-hmm. Because how could you actually be covering something for 20 years and not have an opinion on it? The people who, it's just, everyone has an opinion. The very act of deciding to cover a news story is an opinion. You didn't cover every story that was out there. You covered the ones you thought were important to your audience. And that's an opinion. And so this idea, this fake objectivity, is one of the things that drives me nuts these days.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's worth examining the coverage. And yeah, if you are a reporter these days compared to, say, decades ago, I'm sure you may feel a bit more, scrutinized, but I also would contend that is a healthy thing by and large, if you're not taking it to the point of, some people just call everything fake news, those right. kind of people. I have no time for that, but let's talk about the coverage. Of course, the big story this week is very, very far away from Wisconsin and from the U.S. for that matter, but it is one of those times when we can really look at the media writ large on how they handle a big event. Most recently it was the pandemic. Sometimes it's elections. Sometimes it's tragedies like 9/11. In this case, it's the passing of a head of state of another country, but one that, Americans felt a connection to. They feel a connection to the country because of our history, and they feel a connection to Queen Elizabeth, for reasons I outlined in the last hour, that, she was certainly far from perfect, but, some of her nice qualities really appealed to people. And Mark, at that point, I get the impression you'd just like to say, that's great. Turn the channel. We're
yeah.
done.
Oh, yeah. No, seems like a nice lady. Great. But this idea that we have to, that means we have to decide that the monarchy is charming and cute and everything's neat. And boy, I wish we had one. And let's adopt theirs. And this idea that the monarchy is a positive thing, when if you look at history, it's a mechanism for oppressing people for centuries. That's what it is. It is this inherent concept. It's this concept that some people are inherently better than other people because of their what family they were born into. And again, I understand that some people in England, you know, they think that it's, you know, it's part of their history, you know, all right. So, you know, but this idea that, boy, we'd be better off here if that happened, or isn't the monarchy great? I think really bothers me. And it also, when you see, I mean, it's, I feel like cable news has been almost unwatchable for the last 24 hours because of that. And you, it also has been like the whitest 24 hours, in, you know, that I can remember. I mean, because we're like, we are, the news media seem to be just really just lavishing praise and adoration on, you know, European kings and queens. It's weird.
I wonder how that will change with King Charles, and we're getting away from media coverage for a bit, but who else can I engage in wild speculation with? And this next part is going to be it's definitely going to have a streak related to gender in it. She was a big deal. She was a big deal for many reasons. We don't have to delve into it. But when I think about a King Charles, I sometimes wonder if where that particular monarchy is going is like, and I was trying to look up, who are all the current monarchs, kings and queens? For example, a lot of people don't know, Belgium, you know, has a king. Cambodia has a king. Denmark has a king. Japan has an emperor, you know, and all of them are basically figureheads. And right. We know Elizabeth was too, but she also had the celebrity and all the drama in the news. And there's going to be nothing but kings probably for the foreseeable future when you look at the line of succession. And I just think that, you know, whether it's Charles and then William and then the others, I don't think we're going to see that kind of media coverage of the monarchy once Elizabeth is laid in that tomb. I think a lot of media outlets that covered the royal family's every move are going to kind of look at Charles and William and the rest and go, okay, that's the end of that beat.
Yeah, I think you have a point there, because they don't seem that positive, you know, as far as public figures. And, you know, Charles comes with a lot of baggage, and we'll just see. You know, the value, the positive thing about the royal family, if there is one, is that they do have bully pulpit. They do have the ability to it did matter when Princess Diana, you know, touched an AIDS patient. It mattered because it said something positive and humanistic. But, you know, I just don't, the royals just seem to come in Britain, at least, seem to make a mess of things. And I think people are going to get a lot more tired of Charles a lot faster than they did Elizabeth. And so I think you're right.
And so taking this back to US media and 24/7 coverage. And again, this is a real beef of mine, is that it's no longer the case where you have Walter Cronkite on for 30 minutes and you have, you know, your evening newspaper. We have unlimited, truly unlimited space now between 24 hours on the clock. And then there's no ink restriction. You can build as many web pages as you want. And yet they'll do 24/7 coverage, talking ceaselessly about any big event. This is just the most recent example, when you're going, wait a minute, weren't we just talking about the threat to national security posed by Donald Trump with those secret papers? Do we suddenly forget about that? They have forgotten how to put the news in perspective. And when you take your eye off the ball of what you were just saying was critically important, why wouldn't your viewers think, oh, I guess that's not such a big story, or they'd still be talking about it?
You know, I really feel like that the cable TV channels and, you know, big networks welcome this kind of respite from the politics. I think they've grown scared of the politics. I think they view it as something that causes people to consider them to be liberals or considers them to be this or that. They get complaints from all sides. It's become a scary thing for them, and I feel like that they almost would rather avoid it with some sort of distraction. So I bet they welcome this as a distraction. But yeah, I mean, I was thinking that yesterday. I mean, we're just talking about this, you know, nice old lady with her fashionable hats. And I'm thinking, you know, it seems like we're like in the midst of a attempted coup. Mm-hmm. and people need to like get serious about it, you know, and if there's an election coming up in 2 months. And I think it seems pretty obvious that the Republicans are going to complain that it was fraudulent no matter what happens, unless they win everything. But if they don't win everything, they're going to declare what they didn't win to be fraudulent, because that's their playbook, and they're going to do it again. They're already setting up to do it.
And all that really tells us, Mark, is that once upon a time in this nation, at its founding, there were people who wanted independence, and then there were people who were monarchists and said, no, we should still stick with the king. And then for the longest time, we didn't have monarchists here. And now we do, but not of a king of, you know, Great Britain, but one of their own making, a failed businessman, a failed game show host, a failed everything. But he's good at the bluster. And these are folks they want to install into power. And somebody who he himself continues to tweet out on his tiny little network that he should be put in power. That is the frame of this monarch's passing that we should really focus on in bringing attention back to the states.
Right. The idea that you just are owed power, mm-hmm. you know, and that and it does, the will of the people is irrelevant. I do worry about that. I worry that there's an impulse among a lot of people to have a strongman leader or to be told what to do. Every time I hear the word British subjects, the word subjects just gives me, you know, it just makes me nervous. I mean, it's like, who wants to be a subject? I don't want to be a subject. I don't want to be born to be told what to do by a government. That's not America. And I do worry that this whole idea, I mean, I was raised in school, and I was raised by my parents to believe that democracy and people deciding how their government would operate was the best way and the fairest way. And you start getting this view now where, oh, kings and queens are great, and so are, you know, fascist leaders who stay in power as long as they feel like. And hearing that in America is very alarming.
And it should be, because there are so many people who would say, oh, that can't happen here. If we've learned nothing from the repeal of Roe v. Wade, it's that we are living in a time where you'd better not say that can't happen here. Oh. I have known in time a lot of people from the Philippines, and I've watched what happened with Duterte as he took over, again, claiming to be democratically elected, but went right into strongman mode and started mowing people down in the streets. And there's plenty of other countries that had what you would call a functional democracy that are no longer functional in that way. Right. And so it's not as if turning from democracy to an authoritarian for various reasons can never happen here. Of course it can.
Right. We're not that different. And when I worked at the Chicago Sun-Times, I worked with a copy editor named Eddie Montalbano, who was a journalist in Manila during Marcos. Mm-hmm. And he got arrested for writing something and had to flee the country and became a copy editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. And I was talking to Eddie one time, and I said, you know, the thing about Marcos didn't start out that bad, did he? And Eddie said, no. I said, but of course, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And Eddie said, Marcos used to quote that. Marcos used to quote it, and then he did it, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's why being a little bit bad or being a little bit fascist or being a little bit autocratic, you know, is, you have to worry what comes next.
You do. And not just the people close to them, but the people who either vote for them or support them. And that's just, again, my way of saying that a whole lot of people who have voted Republican or lean voting Republican have really got to ask themselves if they're going to continue to vote that way just out of habit, out of reflex. And if you can't vote for a Democrat, do you just sit this one out? And yet, when you look at the polling, Mark, you're still going to find a good 40% of people are okay voting along with something that is on a very slippery path to a bad place.
You know, it is hard to break old habits and hard to break traditions. You know, my family's always been X. You know, my family's always been Democratic, Republican. But I would suggest that this would be a really good election to give the Republican Party a timeout, like, you know, like parents do when their kids misbehave. Give the Republican Party a timeout. Don't vote for any Republicans, because they've become a very alarming autocratic movement. So don't vote for them this time, and then see what happens. That doesn't mean you agree with the Democrats and everything. Of course not. But but give them a timeout. I would say that that's what people ought to, who are longtime Republicans, ought to really think about doing.
Mark Jacob is with us on this Friday morning, and we will continue our discussion after this break. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Mark Jacob joins us on this Friday morning, Up North News. I'm Pat Wright-Lowe. As we talk about what's happening in the media in the United States, sometimes there's going to be long lead-in questions because you have to set it up in this way or that way. But Mark knows enough about this topic or has a strong enough opinion that I can just set it up in just a handful of words. Mark, what the hell is happening with CNN?
Well, interesting that you should ask that question, Pat. I think that what's happening with CNN is they are making a potentially disastrous mistake by trying to position themselves in the middle in a situation in which there's almost no middle in the United States left anymore. And trying to, I think, maybe try to carve out some readers from, some viewers from Fox News. But in effect, what they're trying to do is become less political when the most important news in the country is political. They're trying to become neutral on the question of whether whether democracy or fascism is the best way to run the United States. And to me, being neutral about that is taking a side. And so what they've done on CNN is, you know, you're starting to see these reports of CNN kind of reaching out to Republicans, assuring them they're going to have equal access to the airwaves. There are they've gotten rid of two pretty important figures at CNN, Brian Stelter, who did their Reliable Sources show on Sunday mornings, and John Harwood, who was a really good commentator. Both of them were really calling out the Republican Party for its steer toward authoritarianism, which is a fact. I mean, you know, you could spend all day laying out the facts that prove that case. So it's not an opinion, it's a fact. And anyway, they got rid of them. And the thing about Reliable Sources is it was doing very well in its time slot. It was ratings were fine. It wasn't that they didn't like that. And it was their longest running show. They just axed it, got rid of Brian Stelter, didn't replace it with anything else about the media. It's almost like they don't want to talk about the media in an environment in which news coverage of what's happening politically is extremely important. So, and then here, Pat, you know, you probably were paying great attention to the reaction to Biden's anti-fascism speech from last week, mm-hmm. where CNN, their big reaction to that was, well, what is he doing in putting two Marines in the background when he gives this speech, and how he's politicizing the military and all that other stuff? When, you know, people's immediate reaction to that was to show pictures of, you know, every recent former president having militaries behind them when they gave speeches. And so, you know, that, it wasn't a departure. It was pretty much the way things are done. And they certainly Biden hasn't done anything as outrageous as holding the Republican National Convention at the White House,
right,
which, you know, which blew my mind, which Trump did. So CNN is like seizing on this extremely minor thing, maybe the most, you know, 600th most noteworthy thing about the speech, and going over and over and for days talking about it. And I can only think that what that is, and it's Breonna Keeler, who usually has been pretty good, I thought,
yes,
leading the bandwagon. And I only thing I can figure out is that there's a lot of pressure from above on these anchors to be neutral, to be both sides. And she seized on this as an attempt to show to her bosses that she was being that way to protect herself. In effect, she used that criticism as a shield against her bosses so they wouldn't put too much pressure on her, and therefore, you know, she, in effect, she was throwing them a crumb. Mm-hmm. I hope that's what she was doing. Otherwise, if she really thinks that, it's kind of crazy.
Definitely. And it's such an abrupt change in her tone of coverage. And the things that, I mean, she used to be really well known for these insightful essays, laced with video clips that, right. that called out hypocrisy and sort of focus on, the stagecraft just seemed so unlike her and very silly. And you have something similar happening over at Politico. And granted, a lot of our audience probably has never heard of Politico or The Hill or Roll Call, basically these national publications dedicated to covering Congress and such. But these are things that are read by a whole lot of people who may be, influenced by the writing one way or another. And Mark, we've talked about this before, that it's one thing to state that you're going to be, out there center left, center right, whatever. It's a different thing when they don't tell you that, but the bosses behind the scenes, the editor, the publisher, whatnot, is still driving that coverage, and the audience right. doesn't know about it. At least right. now,
and they're claiming to be objective.
Right.
I mean, they're claiming, well, we don't have any biases, but when you look at it, that they do. And the deal with Politico is, it's acquired by a German firm now, and one of the top execs wrote an email saying that they were praying that Trump got reelected and explaining how good he was, how great he was on tax reform, and how they all wanted him to get reelected. And the Washington Post reporter who was doing the story confronted him with it, and he denied that the email even existed. He said, there's no such email, there isn't. And the Washington Post reporter showed him a copy of it, and then he relented and said, oh, okay, there was. So you have this head of this media company just lying his butt off about something really important. And in effect, what they're talking about now is how, they want to be nonpartisan, and they want to position themselves as just as not having a partisan position. And Pat, the thing that drives me a little bit nuts is how people are conflating partisanship and politicization. And don't you really want your, isn't that what the Founding Fathers were all about? It wasn't that politics? Don't you want your president to be political? Isn't supporting elections? Michelle Obama, for example, like just in her talk this week, talked about how a peaceful transfer of power is very important in this country. And this reporter for the Daily Mail said, whoa, Michelle Obama is being very political. Political? I mean, so it's a controversial move to say we need peaceful transfer of power after an election? Really? That's something noteworthy, and it's political, and it's bad that she said that?
Look, the thing I will always give Hillary Clinton credit for that she got a lot of heat for was her line about, that she's not just going to sit around and bake cookies. And, people twisted that as if, she's anti, stay at home mom and everything else. That was her way of saying, I get to have opinions. I get to do things and I'm going to. And, Michelle Obama is allowed to speak out in favor of democracy.
But what I'm getting at, Pat, is the idea that that's some sort of controversial partisan stand it said that whole episode said more about the reporter than it did about Michelle Obama, and that reporter thinking that, it's wrong to stick up for democracy. I mean, that's some sort of going out on a limb thing. I mean, it's like, we are really in the other world. We're in the crazy time, if that's the case. And when news media they surrender their obligation to give people facts and to say, to examine what people say rather than just let it go and give, here's Republicans, you can lie 10 times. Here's Democrats, you can lie 10 times or whatever. If they want to get in a position where they're going to say, just open up their airwaves or open up their articles for everyone to say anything, and they're not going to fact check it, and they're not going to say who's telling the truth and who's lying, then what the heck are they for? That's not journalism. It's stenography, as so many people have said, and it's useless, and it doesn't serve the public at all. It is not. It serves the news outlet. This is so much of this stuff is news outlets being self-serving instead of serving the public.
you wrote on Twitter on Wednesday something that stuck with me about Republicans who are saying a lot of things versus proposing things. When you wrote, the Republican attacks on teachers, on librarians, and medical workers make me wonder whether there's any aspect of modern civilization that they actually like other than bad TV. And I mean, that really kind of struck with me that we have an entire political class. And by the way, not just teachers, not just librarians, not just medical workers, election workers, people who have kept our elections fair for decades, who are now leaving because of the threats and
violent threats, because of violent threats and accusations that they committed felonies. Mm-hmm. It's like, and so, I mean, think about that. Those poll workers, they're like taking time. They're mostly a lot of retirees and people, folks like that. And they're volunteering, they get paid some very modest sum. And they're doing that to help make democracy strong, to make it function. And yet they're being attacked. I get the thing about me personally is, I was raised by Barry Goldwater supporters and, very conservative people. And they used to, they would tell me that those liberal Democrats they didn't really believe in the American ideals, and they were just too sympathetic with the Russians. And my parents were right that there was a real problem with people being not adhering to American ideals and being too cozy with the Russians. But they didn't realize that that was the Republican Party, that would turn out to be the Republican Party that was abandoning American ideals and was being too cozy with the Russians.
It is something. It's really something, again, and something else you noted on Wednesday, when you have somebody who was a one-time columnist working at one of your papers, who starts off a sentence that says, many of us didn't like what happened on January 6th, but, and you just stopped it right there and said, but that's the line right now in America.
Right.
Are you using the word but in a sentence like that?
You just can't do that. I mean, that's like saying, well, but many of us didn't like it too much, but in other words, something else was worse. And this is, it's minimizing the one of the most appalling days in American history. Mm-hmm. And well, this guy, John Cass, I used to edit him, by the way, and we've had a break in our relationship just simply because he took a buyout at the Tribune and has been just probably the biggest buyout that anyone got at that time. And he's just been trashing the place since, which isn't fair. And he's also just gone totally right wing. And, like, for example, he's constantly talking about open borders. And, multiple millions of migrants who showed up seeking asylum at the border have been taken into custody, have been stopped, have been apprehended. So does that happen when you're open borders? I mean, open borders, I would think, would mean that nobody got apprehended. But when you have millions being apprehended, is that open borders? And yet they keep on saying it over and over and over again.
I know.
He's part of that crowd. And it's very disappointing, that he's gone there. I've certainly gone a different path since I left the Tribune. But anyway, so I do think that there's this attempt to kind of minimize what happened on January 6th. And Pat, I hope we get back to those hearings. They were fantastically constructed, very clear, very interesting, very fact-oriented, had a lot of Republican voices in those hearings, which I thought was appropriate.
Very much
so. We've been looking at the whole Mar-a-Lago search thing. That's been in the news for the last month or so. But we'll come back to those hearings and we'll hear more. And I think they're going to focus a little bit on how Trump, built his own followers, ran a scam similar to what Steve Bannon just got indicted for, where you tell people you want their money for one thing and then you just pocket it.
I hate to end on a down note, but I have to, because you took note of it. When an elected public official is arrested in the murder of a Las Vegas reporter, it reminds us that violence against the media was mainstreamed by Trump. And we saw that in, the person who is now Montana's governor assaulting a reporter in 2017. These are not normal times when you're doing stuff like that.
No, it's not. And that's also not partisan, because Mike's comment isn't partisan, because that that public official in Nevada was a Democrat, mm-hmm. but a corrupt Democrat mm-hmm. who was being written about by the local journalist, and journalist ends up being stabbed to death, and the politician ends up being arrested. And this idea that violence is a tool of politics is very dangerous.
It is.
Very dangerous. And you're seeing it from high levels. You're seeing Lindsey Graham talking about rioting and stuff. It's exactly. It's scary.
Mark Jacob, thanks for the visit. We'll do it again next week. Thanks so much. Have a great day. Well, I guess it's going to be a rainy weekend here, which tells me Luke is going camping again.
Not this weekend.
No?
Oh, not this weekend.
Okay. I just figured if somebody's camping, if it's raining, so it might be you. Assuming, I have not looked in detail to see when the rain's going to hit here, but since I'm visiting Madison and hoping to hit the farmer's market tomorrow, what other buying advice do you have? I went on and on about the spicy cheese bread, and Christina Laurie's going to join us at the top of the next hour, and she's the one that brought it to me, and now I'm completely hooked on it. And we, of course, you have to have the obligatory mention of zucchini, so we're done with that now. Give me, again, this is unsolicited advertising, I guess. Give me one more great idea I should be looking for to take back up the road to Chippewa.
Okay, you're putting me on the spot here.
I know. Well, I didn't think it would be that hard. I thought maybe you had a
few go-tos. No, I've only gone to a handful of, really a few, like two or three markets so far this year. Saturday mornings have been fairly busy, and so... I like to go to a lot of different places.
Okay. All right. So I will let you know on Monday.
Yeah, Stella's is a really good one for the spicy cheese bread, mm-hmm. and I'm shocked that is a new find for you. That wasn't something that you were. Did you go to farmers markets when you were?
No.
Or did you always head back up to the district when you were in the state senate?
Yes. Yeah. We were never here on the weekends. I'd gone to the Dane County Farmers Market, I think, two times. Ever overall. And I had seen the spicy cheese bread, but I, you know, never actually had it, but, noted that, you know, and my wife, you know, loves, plants and flowers and noticed, you know, was focused on more of that. And I know there were some other, you know, treats and things, either chocolates or candy sometimes at some of these booths. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we get out there, But again, since you know where I am on green vegetables, you can see.
I was just saying, you're not like necessarily the healthiest eater, so I don't know what to recommend in that front. There's I always pronounce it looks like a psyllium, but I know it's not a psyllium. It's like a psyllium. Corn is really good.
Okay.
They got a yellow tent on the square. They're very good. And they do so that they can have a booth throughout the year when it's not just sweet corn season, because we're nearing the end of that. They freeze it, and so they have these packages, and they throw in some bell peppers in some of them, some habanero peppers in the others, and it's a really great option for throughout the year when you want some really great tasting corn, mm-hmm. to be able to go to your freezer and have I don't know what they do to make it taste so fresh still when you actually do eat it, but it is a great process that they got going on. Friend of the station when you're talking about plants, Gordy Kopke. So if you're looking for a pumpkin or a gourd, Gordy's greenhouse or Kopke's greenhouse.
We're getting to that time, aren't we?
That's a good one. Yeah, it's gonna. I can probably tell you there's gonna be some of those up there now that it is September and people mm-hmm. are starting to focus on fall.
Right.
It's not quite here yet, so I won't be buying any of that stuff yet. But that's coming. There's some excellent apple. There's so many different apple place, apple booths and vendors at the market. So you'll be able to definitely get some good apples. That's kind of on the sweeter side. So I'm trying to appeal to that mm-hmm. part of your nature. If you're against the zucchini and the vegetables, apples are delicious. And if you want a really good cup of coffee, Wonder State Coffee is up, and their roaster was in Viroqua,
mm-hmm.
And they have a coffee shop up in Bayfield, I believe, in northern Wisconsin, but they, in the last year or so, within the last 2 years maybe, they opened up their Capitol Square location, and so right on Capitol Square, outside of the farmer's market area, but in a brick and mortar building, you can go to Wonder State Coffee, and they do an excellent everything. So those would, I guess, be my recommendations for the morning.
Okay. The Brewers swept a doubleheader against San Francisco yesterday. They took game one, 2-1, and Nightcap, 4-2. In the second game, some good news for Brewers pitching. Taylor Rogers struck out the side in the ninth inning to pick up the save. So there are signs of hope again amongst the pitchers. And in game one, Corbin Burns had 14 strikeouts. So we've mentioned that Freddie Peralta went out in the third inning of game two. And Eric Lauer, the day before, went out in the third inning.
After Lauer did it, too.
Yep. So there's good news and bad news on Brewers pitching.
Jace Peterson better get ready to just start having a regular position on the mound then.
Well, he did get the side out 1-2-3 the other day. So yeah,
when they were down 8-0 or whatever, 8-2 or
yeah, at that point,
it was kind of a runaway at that point.
Yep. So despite going 2-5 out west, the Brewers yesterday managed to pick up a game and a half on the Phillies for that final National League wild card spot. And yeah, it's depressing that we're talking about getting the wild card spot instead, but you got to be realistic. And they're still trailing the Padres by 3 games for a wild card spot. So we'll just continue to chase after those things in the meantime. We've got Christina Laurie, who's going to join us in the top of our next hour, and along with the spicy bread, we're going to get into some of the good news stories that she's been sharing with us. She created a franchise for us called Uplifting, and talking about the stories that have made a difference. I told you yesterday, I think it was, about the firefighters in, was it Fitchburg?
I believe so. Yes.
Made the day of a young man, giving him the free rein of a fire truck. But there's so much more to it, to what Christina's doing. And then following that, we will be joined by Ruth Conniff of the Wisconsin Examiner. And we've heard more than a couple of times because Wisconsin Examiner and Up North News came online within 6 months of each other. And, people asking about, what is this? What is that? And so we're going to talk about the difference between our structures. Our parent company is Courier Newsroom. Theirs is called States Newsroom, I believe. Courier Newsroom is in 8 states. States Newsroom is in many, many more than that. So we're going to talk a bit about, starting up new state-based political, covering politics and policy news sites in Wisconsin. Because, again, if you look up where we have the bulk of our listeners to Bull Falls Radio around Wausau, this is a place that at best has relied on the Journal Sentinel. Now, again, I'm talking pre-pandemic, when not that many people were buying paper copies of something, if they could even get the Journal Sentinel. So for news, they were relying on, whatever bureau was operating for their local newspaper. And you see less and less of that all the time. And so then all people were getting for the longest time was conservative talk, which then blossomed into, just out and out right-wing talk radio. And the best that they were hearing in terms of state-based news, came from a sharply partisan lens on the right. So now we're seeing the growth of digital media outlets, and some of them are left of center, some of them are right of center. And as long as you don't do what Mark Jacob talked about and try to pretend that you're nothing, that you have no biases whatsoever, because that's just a recipe for, A, boredom, and B, failure, because you're not being as truthful as you could be. You have to be able to call things as you see them. That's how you respect your audience. That's what Ruth is trying to do at the Wisconsin Examiner, and we'll talk to her about that in our next hour as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north. Hey!